Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, May 28th, 2013, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-hosts, Lavendar and Anastasia. Our special guest this evening is Renee Barnett, a television producer and filmmaker and radio host at LA Talk Radio. She'll be telling us about the Henry Lincoln Archive Project concerning the mysteries of South France and Mary Magdalene and her upcoming trip to France. We're also looking forward to hearing about her latest research project, which concerns the hidden history of Arkansas, which is the home of our crystal quests, and Oklahoma. She's a veteran television producer who's worked on many shows you've probably seen, as well as the former managing editor of UFO Magazine. You can visit either of her Facebook pages, which would be Night Vision Radio or Renee Barnett. And she also has a link to her radio show at latalkradio.com/Renee. At the top of the show, it's the Starseed News segment with Anastasia, bringing topics of interest to Starseed and sharing some emails from our listeners. And we'd like to thank Chris and Fiona for hosting our switchboard this evening. And you're welcome to call in with comments or questions. The number to dial is 917-889-8292. And remember to press 1 on your keypad so we know you want to come on the air. And please remember to click follow on our page if you like the show. We've now passed the 300,000 listens mark, so thanks to all of you for continuing to tune in. If you're joining us for the first time, our main site is starseedhotline.com, where you can find a lot of vital information for Starseed in our Vault of Knowledge. And the entire site has been coded for Starseed activations. We have a support forum for Starseed at starseedhotline.ning.com. And we'd like to thank Rose and Tammy for their great work and dedication on behalf of our Starseed Forum. You can also find us on iTunes if you'd like to download our shows to go, or download them right from our show page archives. We'll get started in just a moment, but first I'd like to let you know that if you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. The Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings in your natal astrological chart. And the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one phone session available with Lavendar, Anastasia, or myself. And remote healing sessions with Tammy are also available. If you have a birthday coming up, you should know when your 10 hours of power will occur by getting your solar return timing. And please allow at least 2 weeks ahead of time to make sure that you do get it in time. And now I'd like to introduce my co-hosts, Lavendar and Anastasia. Good evening, ladies.
Good evening, everybody. Good evening, Lavendar, Arielle. How is everybody tonight?
Oh, we're here. It's been some time since I've been on the show. I've been gone, what, a month?
Here I am. We have missed you. Glad you're back. Everything's back to normal.
Thank you. I know that you have something to tell us tonight about that grand alignment that they're seeing on the West Coast with three planets. Did you pick up on that?
Yes, I do. I've got just a little bit about that. We've got so much news to cover tonight.
Great. Go for it, girl.
I'm going to go for it. This has been a wild time. And I want to thank Chris, especially for her contributions to the show tonight. She sent me some wonderful news pieces. She always does. Bless her heart. And Ivan from the UK. Ivan, thank you. And other Starseed have sent me information. I just love all of you, and I appreciate it very, very much. And we do need to get into the news right now because we have so much to cover. I want to start by talking about the solar windstorm. Now, for the third day in a row, a remarkably fast stream of solar wind is blowing around the Earth. Now, I know this is high atmosphere stuff, but I got to tell you, the wind in our area has been really crazy, just intense winds. And I don't know if that's connected to that or not, but these solar winds are blowing at 700 kilometers a second around the Earth, and it's causing magnetic unrest around the poles, as well as elevated levels of high-energy electrons in Earth's orbit. So they're even cautioning satellite operators that satellite systems can experience significant charging in response to these accumulated electrons. There's been a lot going on out there. And some of you that get cable television may have noticed that your pictures may be pixelizing. And about what Lavendar just talked about, that beautiful triangulation of Jupiter, Venus, and Mercury has peaked now, and it is breaking up. But the show isn't over. As the triple conjunction disperses, Venus is passing Jupiter only just a degree away. And so we can watch the two brightest planets move so close together tonight at sunset. If it's not sunset where you are yet, you get a chance to see it. Just look west. And that is a tremendous display in the sky. Any of you that might have seen it live, I hope you did, or pictures of it on the net. Just beautiful, that beautiful triangle in the sky. Wow, what a thing that is to see. And I want to talk a little bit about fireballs. I mentioned last week also that there is a global extinction-sized asteroid that's going to sail past the Earth next week. It's coming by on May 31st. It is called Apophis. Excuse me. And they're talking about it being, well, actually, it's not Apophis, excuse me, it's bigger than Apophis, I wanted to mention that, but it's dubbed 1998 QE2, and it's going to make its closest pass on May 31st. Now, it's 1.7 miles long. They say that if it came and hit the planet, it would be an extinction-level event, but of course, it's just a flyby right now, and they are saying that comets are much more dangerous than asteroids because comets come in at such a fast speed, and we've been seeing, of course, a lot of fireballs. I'm talking about two subjects here at once, comets and asteroids. Sometimes we confuse them. And they say that even though asteroids are spectacular and we worry about them, that damage from comets could be far more severe because they come in at such a rapid rate of speed and it just takes sometimes a very small one to cause damage. But there is a lot of activity going on up there. As a matter of fact, the man was driving his car. He's in Quebec on the 21st of May and was hit by a dark meteorite that came through the sky and smashed his windshield. And that comes from Radio Canada. They had a video of it on the Internet. Fascinating. Of course, they were speaking in French. I couldn't understand them. But it showed the damage to his windshield, and it was a meteorite, that came in and hit his windshield. So we're still having fireballs all over the planet and a lot of things happening. And I want to talk to you all tonight about something that really got touched me deeply. I just love nature. I think you probably all figured that out by now. And I love bees. And I often contemplated being a beekeeper at some point in my life. Bees are wonderful little critters. There's a concerning story out about some bees, about the bees of our planet. And I want to start by telling you about the state of Illinois. Now, I'm from Illinois originally, so I'm somewhat distressed at many of the news items that I bring up on the program that are about my home state that are very concerning about the way government is being conducted there now. But there's a story off the Internet, and this one comes from Global Research News, by the way, that a man named Terrence Ingram, now maybe some of you have heard of him, he's most well known by his work with the American Bald Eagle. There's hardly anyone in the United States that is regarded more importantly than Terrence Ingram. He had documented research extending for years and great expertise regarding eagles, and he developed the Eagle Nature Foundation. And so he's partly responsible for the bald eagle being removed from the threatened species list. Well, what does this have to do with bees? Well, this man is a beekeeper. And it wasn't his knowledge of eagles that caused the Illinois Department of Agriculture to visit his house in April. It was his bees. Actually, they visited his home in March. They came to see his bees. Now, you need to know that Mr. Ingram had been investigating the effect of Roundup on the bee population. He had years and years of research that he had studied and had maintained his hives and the bees through his breeding documenting the effect of pesticides on bees. And he was about ready to, I believe, substantiate his findings that Monsanto's product, Roundup, is largely responsible for the bee die-off. And just about, you know, he's doing his work and he's doing good work. And he was raided by the Department of Agriculture of the state of Illinois, who came in on a Sunday and stole his hives. They took them without warrant. They claimed that he had a disease, bee disease called foul brood. Well, when you study the whole story, they didn't have foul brood. That was a phony charge. They raided the hives in the winter or late fall when it was very cold outside and all of the baby bees were grown. Foul brood is a disease that affects baby bees, not adult bees. On and on it goes. Now they took him to court and made their case against him and wouldn't allow him to prove that his bees were not diseased. Everyone that knows the story and is familiar with it is convinced that this is probably because he was researching the Roundup connection to bee death. And so they don't know, they won't tell him what they did with his bees. He thinks they may have been destroyed, and it's caused such an outcry among beekeepers in the state of Illinois that people that are now beginning to keep bees say that they're not going to register their hives. Maybe some of you don't know this, but the government requires that hives be registered so that the Department of Agriculture in respective states can come and inspect your bees. Many people are saying now that they're not going to register their bees. They're just going to hide them from the state to prevent this kind of thing from occurring again. It's really a sad story, and it's very, very disturbing because of the underlying innuendo that he may have been onto something and up against a very powerful company. So, and in line with that, I wanted you all to know that Russia has warned President Obama that there may be a global war over what they see as a bee apocalypse coming to the planet in the not-too-distant future. Now, apparently, President Putin was scheduled to meet with the U.S. Secretary of State, John Kerry, but there was a delay in that meeting because of the Russian leader's extreme outrage over the Obama administration's continued protection of global seed and plant biogenetic giants Monsanto and Syngenta. And the Russians believe that a bee apocalypse is coming, and they say that it will most certainly lead to a world war. Now, Russians are so concerned about the United States' refusal to discuss this grave matter related to the bees that they, suspended their diplomatic talks for a while. Now, they say that there is undisputed evidence that a class of neuroactive insecticides, and they're calling these particular insecticides, it's related to nicotine. It's a neonicotinoid that's destroying the planet's bee population. And they say that if it's not stopped, it will destroy our world's abilities to grow enough food to feed the population. You know, bees are so essential to having food on this planet. And so there are other nations of the world are recognizing that the United States' support of bioengineering and genetically engineered and genetically modified corn and seeds and pesticides is really threatening on a planetary scale the ability to have safe and healthy food on this planet. So this is something you're not going to hear on the mainstream news, that major countries are very concerned about that in Europe. So I wanted to pass that along to you. And also they have discovered that these particular seeds, that these are produced by Monsanto and these other companies, are poisonous to birds. And they say that even just one grain of corn from this coated particular kind of seed will kill a bird. And even a very tiny fraction of it will prevent their breeding. So, you know, our use of pesticides and modified products is really affecting the natural state of the planet. She's severely out of balance. And thank goodness there are some places where this is being recognized and there is efforts underway to bring the planet back into balance. We may not realize this, but over 90% of the wild bee population in the United States has already died out, and up to 80% of domestic bees are also gone. Now, that's really sobering. So whenever I see a bee in the yard, I clap my hands because bees are very special. And a lot of you can remember maybe from the time that you were young when we used to see bees everywhere on the dandelions and on the flowers. You just don't see that many bees anymore. So we need to be mindful, and when we garden and do our outdoor work, that we do this in an organic way. Really, we really have to do that and take care of the little creatures, because, you know, what gets them is going to get us next, and we're all connected. And I want to talk to you a little bit about the water supply in the country. They say that the Colorado River and the High Plains Aquifer in the entire western half of the United States is rapidly drying up. And scientists are telling us that the 20th century was the wettest century in the western half of the country in over 1,000 years. But now things appear to be reverting to their normal historical patterns. Now, in that period of a lot of water, we built big cities in the desert, such as Las Vegas and Phoenix, that support millions upon millions of people. And cities all over the Southwest have continued to grow, even as the Colorado River, Lake Mead, and the High Plains Aquifer System are running dry. According to the New York Times, or excuse me, I beg your pardon, the Los Angeles Times, the average number of fires larger than 1,000 acres in a year has nearly quadrupled in Arizona and Idaho and has doubled in every other western state since the 1970s. And this is because the rainfall has cut back. It's just not as moist as it used to be for that temporary period of 1,000 years. Sometimes we don't have a long-term perspective of the planet's cycles. Our life cycles are very short, but on a big scale, things come and go on the planet. She goes through shifts and changes, and while we were blessed to enjoy very wet conditions for most of the last century, it appears that that cycle is over. And they say that the Colorado River provides water for irrigation to 15% of the crops in the United States. And it also gives water to Phoenix, Tucson, Los Angeles, San Diego, Las Vegas, you know, all of those cities, more than half of the water supply. Now, the water in Lake Mead is now 130 feet lower since 2000. And water resource officials say some of the reservoirs fed by that river will never be full again. Now, Lake Mead supplies approximately 85% of the water that Las Vegas uses, and since 1998, the water level in Lake Mead has dropped by almost 6 trillion gallons. And so we're seeing a decrease in the water supplies all across the West and in the Midwest as well. Now, they say when Lake Mead falls below 1,050 feet, that will shut down Hoover Dam's turbines, and they predict that will be less than 4 years from now if the current trends hold. And in Las Vegas, that means the lights will start going out. Now, that is a serious problem. Again, you don't hear about this on the news. You know, we can always build more power plants, but we can't build more rivers. And today, 12 years of drought have reduced the flow of the Colorado River to about 12 million acre feet. And people siphon off every bit of it. And they say that the Colorado River is actually running dry 50 miles north of the sea. So that never used to be the case, but that's where it is now. And further east, we have a major problem in the drying up of the aquifer underneath the Midwest. It's called the Ogallala Aquifer, and it's one of the nation's most important natural resource sources. It's used to water crops, irrigate crops all over the Midwest, and it is also running dry. It's being drained at a rate of approximately 800 gallons a minute, and they say that just a couple of decades ago it had an average depth of approximately 240 feet, but today the average depth is 80 feet.
Wow.
And in some areas of Texas, the water is gone completely. Now, if we have a few more summers of severe drought or anything like last summer, we're going to be looking at a major water emergency. So our Starseed listeners need to be aware of that. I really think that's important. And this is just all part of the changes in the planet, and we are meant to adapt, to bend. You know, there's that old Aesop's fable that talks about the oak that was arguing with the grass about which was stronger. And the oak said, "I'm much stronger than you. I'm big and strong and tall, like the human ego. You know, that's an equivalent." And the grass said, "Well, we'll see." So when the wind started to blow, the grass began to bend, but the tree broke and fell. And at the end of the storm, the grass was just as upright and happy as ever. So when the winds of change come, our human egos often don't want to bend. We want to resist. We want to protect all that we've established, all of our, you know, accomplishments, our ideas about our place in the world, and but the key to spirituality is to be able to bend and move and flow with the currents of the planet, with what's happening, and to adapt our behavior and our lifestyles to be supportive of the entire ecosystem that gives us life and gives life to all of the other little living creatures that we all need to be connecting to and loving and appreciating. It's not just about human beings and our needs. It's about the needs of the planetary collective. And on a note about some volcanic activity occurring on Mount Etna, they're saying that these eruptions are becoming more and more violent, and scientists do not know why. Mount Etna is spitting lava just more violently than it has in years. And it's the world's most studied volcano, but it's the most world's most unpredictable. Now, right now, the volcano is raging. Fountains of lava, some taller than the Eiffel Tower, come out of its core every few weeks, and it flows in red-hot streams into the surrounding valleys. There have been 13 eruptions since the beginning of February. Now, Mount Etna is 3,000 meters or 10,000-some-odd feet high, and it's in Sicily. And they have no idea why it is becoming so fierce. And that's just another sign of change. And this came from Ivan in the UK. The UK is having really bizarre weather. I mean, this is weather in May. Snow has fallen in parts of Devon. And also, they've had 65-mile-an-hour winds that have stricken the southwest coast of the UK. Highly unusual weather in the UK, still continuing from last year. And also in the UK, they have a mystery sugar beet condition. They don't know what's wrong with their sugar beets, but they're failing to germinate. 50% of the crops have failed. They say that the germinated seeds are not emerging, and that when they do emerge, there are mysterious and strange symptoms, including roots that are corkscrewing, and the plants are very deformed. So again, more signs of an environment in trouble. Again, our last story for tonight is about Alabama. There are mysterious deaths occurring in the state of Alabama. This came from Russian television. They reported Wednesday that there was just this bizarre spate of respiratory illnesses in Alabama that resulted in some deaths. It has claimed the lives of several people in southeast Alabama and caused other people to be hospitalized, and they have no idea what's causing it, except that it's interesting to note that the southeastern Alabama's cotton fields are in full bloom right now, and that some of these crops are genetically modified cotton. And this cotton has a pesticide within the plant. And there has been a history of serious illnesses that occurred in India whenever genetically modified cotton was grown. So that is something, again, to be aware of. Also, I want to bring to our starseeds' attention is that when you go to get corn on the cob now as it comes into season, please be aware that a lot of this corn that you get from the grocer is going to be genetically modified. So we all need to be aware about that. And if you can't get it locally and you can't verify that it is not organic or made from heritage seeds, it's probably best just to pass the corn. So that, and one other thing I wanted to mention to you before we end tonight's newscast was that, and this is very surprising because a lot of us do eat healthy, we eat organic. New studies have found that chicken meat that has even been grown organically has been found to contain levels of arsenic. And this was published in the Journal of Environmental Health Perspectives. They say that even though, you know, organic chicken should be free of arsenic and antibiotics, when it was tested for arsenic, they found levels that were four times higher. So anyway, organic chicken may have some arsenic in it. Well, that'll be our news for tonight. I'm looking forward to the show. You take it over, Ariel.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Anastasia. And actually, next week, I have some comments, if you remind me. I have some more comments about the bee story, but we have Renee.
Oh, I love that. We'll talk about that next week.
We have Renee Barnett on switchboard now, so we're going to move on with the show. But remind me next week, because there's some other comments that I wanted to make about that. about the news tonight. So thank you so much, Anastasia. And next we are going to be talking to Renee Barnett and Lavendar. So Renee, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's so good to be back with all you wonderful women.
Well, thank you. We do have a few. We do have a few men that listen to our show, and actually, but yes, thank you so
well,
much.
Well, of course, I was speaking to the staff there, but of course,
staff.
It's
okay.
Wonderful to be with your wonderful audience too. We love the men. We love the men.
Yeah. Well, you know, we have to have balance. So, I understand that you have some really interesting things going on, and. Lavendar, I'm just looking to see if...
I'm here.
Okay, yeah. Is your phone working, Lavendar? Are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear
me? Oh, okay. I guess I didn't hear you say that before.
Okay.
So, Lavendar, why don't you kick it off with Renee? And,
okay. Renee, just so glad to be talking to you. And why don't you just start off by telling us more about your Lincoln Project in France?
Oh, I'd love to. Thanks so much, Lavendar. It's always great to talk with you and with your audience. It's a great pleasure for me. Well, I don't know if your audience has heard about it, but I'll just give a little background first. Anyone who's read the Da Vinci Code or been interested in the Rémy-le-Château mysteries or the Grail mysteries or the Bloodline mysteries at all may already know that but for a man called Henry Lincoln, we probably know nearly as much. We certainly wouldn't have seen the work developed in that area over the last 25, 30 years that we have, because it was Henry who, in the 60s, found a little book in France. It was written in French. The title in English is called The Accursed Treasure by a gentleman named Gerard de Sede. And Henry bought the book and realized that within that book there were coded messages. He contacted the author, and the author agreed and said, yes, absolutely, there are messages. We were hoping someone would come along and decipher them. And that began his relationship with Gerard de Sede and consequently with a man called Pierre Plantard, who is generally accepted as the last known grandmaster of a secret society called the Priory of Zion. And the Priory of Zion is said to protect secrets and hand down information through history through various families and through various interested parties who they trust to pass down, you know, knowledge of hidden history of these bloodlines. They claim that these bloodlines emanate through or from Jesus and Mary Magdalene. And after Henry read that book, deciphered those notes, he created three documentaries on the BBC about the Rémy-le-Château mystery. And following that, he co-authored a book which burst onto the public consciousness in 1982 called Holy Blood, Holy Grail. And that book really kicked off a whole genre of research that has spawned countless books, countless articles, films, documentaries, television segments, and programs. And we can trace it all back to Henry. Well, Henry's 83 years old now, and he has decided, with a little bit of prodding initially from me and probably others, I can only imagine, to organize his archives, his massive, massive research of notes, letters, books, photographs, other things that he's collected over the years in his research. There are some amazing, amazing documents that you couldn't see anywhere else, and makes them available to everyone. And his plan is to do that by creating first an online source for all that material, free to everyone who wants to have access to it. And for those who can make it over to France, where Henry lives in the Rémy-le-Château region, ultimately to create a small museum and learning center for the Henry Lincoln Archives, for the originals there, and also, you know, to teach classes. And Henry's still teaching. He's still taking tours around the village, and he loves doing it. He loves sharing the information. So I'm really pleased and honored that he chose me among a very small group of people to sort of head up this Henry Lincoln Archive project. We did an Indiegogo campaign to raise some funds to buy some equipment and some other expenses that we had. And so I'd like to thank everyone who contributed to that. And we not only ask for contributions and money, because we certainly understand with the economy, sometimes that's just not feasible for some people, and we can relate to that. So we also ask people to contribute by sharing the information. If they have particular special skills that might come into play at some point, then let us know that you're interested, and maybe we'll find a job for you. Everything from writing to picking up a paintbrush once we have the actual venue set, and, you know, some construction work. I mean, there'll be all kinds of work, from labor to clerical work to organizing and archiving. So we would like to draw people's attention to the Henry Lincoln Archive page on Facebook. If you're interested, drop us a line, let us know, or you can contact me directly on Facebook, Renee Barnett, and that's R-E-N-E Barnett on Facebook, and I'd love to hear from any of the Starseed listeners who are interested in the project or interested in anything else that we might be doing.
Oh, that just sounds marvelous, Renee. I'm just so proud of you that you picked up the gauntlet with this and started running with it. It's so needed. Is Henry now writing a book now? I mean, is he still writing?
Well, what he's done most recently, and we're just waiting for it to be released, and I believe I did speak with his publisher of this particular book, and he said that it was going to be published in June. Now, that was several months ago, and I haven't contacted that gentleman, so I'm hoping that's still the case. And what Henry has done is he's translated into English that very first book that he found, the Gerard de Sed book, The Accursed Treasure. And it's really interesting, and I'm excited because I actually have a copy of the manuscript, so I've been able to read it. And there was only one English translation of that book. And I wonder, because I happen to know the gentleman who did that translation, I'm not the best French speaker, so I wondered what the differences might be. And there are some major, major differences where Henry's interpretation, his translation, differed from the original book. So I think even if people have read that first one by a man called Bill Kersey, you would do well to read the one by Henry Lincoln as soon as you're able and it comes out, to find those differences. And there's some pretty exciting information there. But, yeah, Henry's always writing. He's always working. He's it's been fun to hear him, you know, going through his research. And about every, you know, few minutes or so, we'll hear him yell out, "Bloody hell!" And that means he's found something amazing that he either forgot that he had, or that had been looking for and couldn't find, or that now makes a huge difference, because the last time he looked at it was 25 or 30 years ago, and his research has been ongoing. So some things are now falling into place that he had before but didn't know what to connect it to. But with his continuing research, he's now been able to, you know, connect those dotted lines. And so it's very, very exciting. He's got some amazing letters from Pierre Plantard, and from back and forth between Pierre Plantard and a man called, his last name is De Charisy, who was working with Plantard. And so it's some really insider information and a real look into the minds of those people that we've only sort of guessed about in the past. And I know that some of the research that Henry has been coming across led him to a couple of locations over there, and it's pretty exciting. And I'll have to wait and let him announce what it is he's discovered. But it's just been really wonderful. And by the way, on my show tomorrow night on Night Vision Radio on LATalkRadio.com, I am having Henry as my guest, and so it should prove to be a very special show, and you know, I'm just really looking forward to it. He's such a great speaker, and the hour usually flies by so fast, it's ridiculous, but we're really looking forward to that one.
Great. You know, I'm curious about his research. Has he ever mentioned anything to you about finding the word the Pleiades, the star cluster? Has anything ever come up about galactic references to his research?
Well, certainly I know that a lot of the research that he's done on the ground, you know, his later research after Holy Blood, you know, sort of evolved into an area of sacred geometry, especially in relationship to the landscape of that area. He discovered that there's, you know, a natural pentagram in the area if you draw lines among all the peaks that surround that area, the tallest points, and where the center of that pentagram is really interesting, and where other points are very interesting. And I know that those line up with planetary alignments and constellations. And I do remember the Pleiades coming up, but certainly in relation to as above, so below, there's definitely that kind of astronomical or astrological references in his work.
So you're planning another trip to France with a tour, right?
We are, yeah. Gloria Amendola and I are doing it again, and we're going back in October. I think it's like the first or the second week in October, and anyone interested can look on GloriaAmendola.com. She has all the information there, and certainly you're encouraged to contact me directly on Facebook, on my homepage, or on Night Vision Radio's page. And I'll be happy to share information or give you a call and talk to you about it. And,
well, give us kind of a thumbnail sketch of what happens when people come with you on the tour. What is it they experience?
Oh, my goodness. There's a lot. There's many layers to it. And I tell people, you know, if you're a history buff, if you're on a spiritual quest, or if you just love beautiful, you know, travel and beautiful sights and landscape and castles, and that there's something for you on the trip, because we do do some spiritual type rituals and things like that that people are encouraged and invited to participate in. If they're not comfortable with that or not interested, then we always have something going on to the side that, you know, that they would be interested in, maybe, you know, a talk on the history of the place, that sort of thing. But there's a lot going on there with the water and, you know, healing waters there, and certainly with the landscape itself. There's a sign above the door of the church at Rennes Le Chateau, which translates to "This place is terrible." And what I've been told is that what that means is this place is awesome. It's not the same terrible, like it's in bad terrible, but it's this place is awesome, and that it may have some reference to the telluric currents in the land, which are very unusual there. And, of course, the ley line, the Rose Line, Meridian, cuts right through that area and right down by Rennes Le Chateau, right through the location of what's sort of commonly called the Poussin Tomb there, which is believed to be depicted in the paintings of Nicolas Poussin and others. And so we go around to these amazing sites, but we also, you know, get in the water. We actually, you know, have a lot of personal experiences there. We've had people there claim to have healings on our trip, and there was one lady who had breast cancer who claims that that was key to her cure, was going there and being in the water there at Rennes Le Chateau. A man who was in his 40s with diabetes said that when he goes in the waters there at Rennes Le Ban, at the bottom of the hill, that he doesn't have to take his insulin because his blood sugar goes to normal. So there's some really key aspects to just walking the land, being on the land, sitting on it, getting your feet bare and stepping them down on it. And then, of course, there's some interesting characters around like Henry Lincoln and others too. And it's also very odd. I've never been there, and I've been there many, many times, but what I haven't, like, run into people that you would never expect to walk up, but it seems like people gravitate to that place, and it's always an amazing experience, and it's my favorite spot in the world, and I love going there, and that's one of the reasons why I keep doing these tours, is because it allows me the privilege of going back there. And just being in that energy. But as I said, if you're not into the energy thing or the spiritual aspect of it, there's certainly the historical, the hidden history, the conspiratorial aspect to the story. And there's also, for people who love the UFOs and the ET experiences, there's a mountain there called Mount Bugarash where people have claimed for a long, long time that you see lots of UFOs going into and out of the mountain. And that mountain has held a lot of attraction for people like Jules Verne, who wrote Journey to the Center of the Earth. And they believe he was referring to that location. And in fact, there was the main character, a main character in that story is Captain Bugarash. So that's kind of interesting. Also, Lewis Carroll at Alice in Wonderland, Through the Looking Glass, those kind of stories. He spent a lot of time in the Rennes Le Château area, and that's believed to have inspired those stories. And also people like Steven Spielberg and others that were said to have been inspired by what's there.
Wow. I'm just closing my eyes visualizing it because, we were there a year ago in May.
Yeah.
So I was just really walking with you with this story. Does Henry have family? Are there people, if something happens to him, who carries on the work? Does he have family?
Yes, he has a son that lives there in the area, and his name is Rupert, and he will be involved. When Henry is no longer on this planet, Rupert will be in charge of the archives along with the board of directors of the archive group of the archive project. But I'm assuming that Rupert will probably have the last word. He's a wonderful guy, and he has done a lot of his own research in the area of megalithic structures and megalithic sites around Europe particularly. So it's connected. It's not the same research, but it's very connected. And, of course, he's, got his father's best interest at heart. So I'm sure he'll treat the material with extreme respect, and he's on board with us promoting it in the way that we're doing it now. So I'm pretty sure, it'll go on and on and on.
Is there a special website that people could go on and donate money for this project?
I just completed an Indiegogo campaign. We're going to do another one. There's right now there's the Facebook page that's the only dedicated site to the project. I know that Henry, I believe his webmaster was going to put a donate button on his page, on his website, which I think is henrylincoln.co.uk. I think that's the site, but certainly if you look for Henry Lincoln, you'll find his site. And, perhaps there's a way to earmark it for the archive project that way. I'm just not sure, but I can definitely get back to you on that. And certainly if we start up another campaign, we'll be more than happy to have people join us and help us out.
Well, that's great, because I know that Starseed Hotline, we definitely want to donate to that project, absolutely. And
well,
when other
you.
Great funds come in that we are holding out for, we'll certainly help with this project, because we believe in it. We have met Henry, we know you, and we know the land, and it just all works together.
Mm-hmm.
So now why don't we take ourselves on a little journey to Oklahoma and Arkansas. Tell us about.
Oh my goodness.
It's home time, girl.
That's right. That's right. Let's get back to the hometown. Well, a lot of people that know me know that, and probably can hear in my voice that I'm originally from Oklahoma, or they probably can figure out I'm at least somewhere south of the Mason-Dixon line. But I grew up in eastern Oklahoma, southeastern Oklahoma, in a very, very tiny town. But the last decade that I lived in Oklahoma, I spent it in Tulsa, and I worked in radio there. On a station called KAKC, which was a popular rock and roll station at the time. And I was a news person and public affairs director for the station there. And that was just prior to my journey out to Los Angeles, where I've been for the past 30 years. And it's so funny because I was talking to some other friends and co-researchers back in that area. And I said, you know, it's the craziest thing. You know, I've been all over. I've been researching. I've been out west now for all this time. And how strange that my research ends up taking me right into my own backyard. And I thought, I had no idea when I was living there as a kid and growing up that there was anything there other than what was just visible to the naked eye. But what's funny is, as a child, I had some good friends in a little town called Heavener, Oklahoma, and every summer I would go over and stay with them, and there was a gang of us girls over in Heavener, and we would run around and go to the park and hang out, and we used to crawl around on this big gigantic stone that we thought had Indian writing on it, and that's all we ever heard, but we didn't know what tribe it was or what language it was. But, of course, many, many years later, we find out through the work of a wonderful researcher and author by the name of Gloria Farley, right there in Heavener, Oklahoma, that the writing on that stone was runic. It dates back to 1012 and to a Viking presence in the middle of the United States, right there in the heartland in Oklahoma, in the year 1012 A.D. So that definitely tells us that, once again, we haven't gotten the full picture. We haven't gotten the whole story. Certainly, there were many, many people that were coming to the United States long, long before Christopher Columbus was ever even conceived or thought of, hundreds or even, you know, 1,000 years before. So that sort of, I did have some exposure to it at the time, but I wasn't aware of what I was being exposed to then. So that sort of started me looking around in those areas, and I started following different trails. And I was actually doing a documentary. Some of your listeners may have seen it, because it's been showing for over 10 years now on the Travel Channel. It's called Bigfootville, and it's about the Bigfoot creatures in Oklahoma. And there's many legends about those for the past, you know, 100 years or so. And as, you know, the Travel Channel, you know, I think they licensed the show from us for about 7 years. And years later, they called us and said, we want to relicense it for another 7 years. And I said, oh, well, would you be interested in a new Bigfoot show, you know, return to Bigfootville? And they said, sure, if you got some new evidence. So I started looking, and I found that there was some photographs that had been taken near Tahlequah, Oklahoma, which you may know is the capital of the Cherokee Nation. And there was some, looked like a Bigfoot creature standing in a creek bed, and it was published in the Tahlequah newspaper. Well, I contacted the reporter who ran the story, and we started talking, and he said, well, you know, this is one of those Tahlequah days. And I said, what do you mean? And he says, well, it's sometimes they just have these really strange days where you think of someone and they show up on your doorstep. You know, the strangest things and coincidences happen. And so I said, well, you know, what about, you know, these Bigfoot creatures? And he goes, well, there's a lot of activity reported about Bigfoot and about UFOs up on Sparrowhawk Mountain which, as you know, Lavendar, is Carol Parish's Santa Sophia location, where I believe that's closed now, as we were talking about earlier. But it's a very special location. And he said, and also over at Lost City. And I said, Lost City? I said, ooh, what's that? It sounds interesting. Mm-hmm. And he goes, oh, it's just this little place. And I said, well, why do they call it Lost City? And he said, well, because it's only 13 miles outside of Tahlequah, and you go straight out one road. He said, but anytime you go out there, you try to go there, you get lost, even though it's just one road. And I said, well, what is out there? He said, nothing really. I said, well, is there a post office or a church or something? He says, well, no. He goes, well, there is one thing. And I said, what's that? He goes, there's a monastery full of French monks. I said, what? And he said, yeah, there's this monastery full of French monks. And he said, they came here, you know, a long time ago, and they insisted on this specific location. And he said, you know, there was a lot of property available at that time, and people tried to get them to look at other places, and they said, no, 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 it had to be this spot. And it had something to do with the underground water that they were interested in. Well, that sort of sparked an interest in me, because I know along a lot of these sacred sites around the world where cathedrals and churches now sit were formerly, you know, sacred sites from other cultures, Druids and other pagan cultures. And the church, you know, would build their structures on top of them and sort of claim that, hey, we're stomping out this paganism. We're going to stamp it out and, you know, put a church there. But I believe what they were really doing was identifying these locations of great power and harnessing that power by, you know, putting their structures there. And a part of that seemed to have something to do with underground water. Well, I kept looking into that, and I started researching those monks coming. And they came in 1974, and they were interviewed by the Tulsa World newspaper, and they were saying, why Oklahoma? Why are you coming to Oklahoma? And they said, well, it's just as easy for us to minister to the people of Oklahoma as it is for us to minister to the people of France. But lo, these, you know, 30, 40 some odd years later, they have still yet to ever mingle with the community. They keep to themselves. They do not minister to anyone. They tend sheep out there, and they make butter and some other kind of goods that they have a little shop that people can come and buy. But as far as intermingling with the community, they don't do it. And I said, what else happened there? What was going on there in 1974? And I remembered that it was the most famous up until just recently with the Russian incident, but the most famous meteorite strike ever was in Lost City, Oklahoma, back in 1974. And the meteorite strike came, I believe, in January. By April, the monks were there. And I thought, well, what would the church care about meteorites? And so I started researching. I found that the Pope has one of the world's largest collections of meteorites. And then I thought about the observatories that the church has. There's one in Italy at Castel Gandolfo at the Pope's summer residence. And then there's one out here in Arizona that's run by the Jesuits. And people have always surmised that, oh, they're looking for ETs coming. And, in fact, the church did make a statement that, if we find ETs, we will convert them to Christianity as we find them. And so everyone thought, oh, they're looking for ETs. They're looking for ETs. But I'm now more of the mind that they might be looking for meteorites. They might be looking for other bodies like asteroids that might be coming our way, and not just because they could be dangerous, but because of something that they contain, and also something that occurs when a meteorite strikes the Earth, particularly if there's underground water that is a great conductor of energy. And so then I looked a little further, and I found that two of those monks were already in the United States when this meteorite strike occurred. and they were studying at the University of Kansas in Lawrence. And what were they studying? Studying meteorites. So I do believe there's some real connection there. And, of course, there's this whole new theory that's come out in the past few years called panspermia, that the actual all life on Earth might have been seeded by meteorites and bacteria that they contained and broke apart when they struck the Earth. And the energy that was created started creating different types of organisms. So, you know, haven't connected all the dots, but that's just one of the trails that I'm following in that area. That's in eastern Oklahoma.
Well, let me ask you, don't you think it's a little strange that they're French?
Well, yeah. Of course, that, you know, that got my ears perked up right away. And I'm going, very, very interesting.
And what do you think this has to do with René Lachuteau?
Well, I think that probably there are places around the Earth that hold a particular energy or hold extra energy, you know, that might be extremely powerful. And I'm thinking that as René Lachuteau is one of those places, it's possible that Lost City is one of those places as well. There's a lot of legends about that area, too.
I have never heard this story. This is most interesting. I'm just riveted with you know, wanting to go there now and look at it and to...
Well, let's do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
let's do it.
What else have you found in the way of caves or artifacts or different things? I know that when you were helping Jesse Ventura do some filming over in that area in Arkansas, that I think you guys found some caves that probably went all the way to Denver or something, I think. Can you give us a little heads up about that?
Yeah. Now, some of those caves were in Arkansas, but some of those caves were in eastern Oklahoma. And there was a woman that was interviewed on the show who's a great friend of mine, and she's from Oklahoma, and she's with the Kituwa Band of Cherokee Indians. She's a tribal member, and she's also, well, she was at that time the historical director and cultural director for the tribe. And I forgot what her position is now. She's still with the tribe. And we interviewed her because she and I had done some, you know, research together, and she knew about stories, you know, that were passed down by word of mouth through the tribe about caves where you can enter in right there in eastern Oklahoma and walk all the way to Denver. And some of them come out, you know, it seems right by that Denver airport, which, you know, people have made a lot of over the artwork in the Denver airport that seems, you know, sort of apocalyptic and has a lot of hidden symbolism in it. And we wondered whether there was any connection with that and these walkways. But it's odd because in that episode, it was really about the Ozarks primarily on the conspiracy theory with Jesse Ventura. We found when we went down that most of those caves have now been shut. They've got like bars over them. You can't get in anymore. And people are wondering what that's all about. Of course, in that same episode, we showed a huge house, I think it's like 10 times bigger than a White House or something like that, that has been built in that area that is built to withstand, you know, hurricanes, nuclear blasts, all kinds of, it's self-sufficient, creates its own climate inside. You know, it's just an amazing, you know, multi-million dollar structure. And people will think, why is this being built here? Do they know something we don't know? Is there something coming? And then that coupled with the fact that they're closing off the caves, it's a little bit odd. You know, those caves have always been open, and people have gone in and out. And, you know, as far as I know, there haven't been that many accidents or anything that would warrant, you know, as a safety feature. But what, you know, the conspiracy buffs say is that, you know, they're closing those off because there is some coming event, and they don't want people to be able to escape and be able to take cover there. I mean, that sounds horrible and very dark, you know, But we do hear these things, and, you know, we do know that we've been lied to about a lot of things. So it's like you got to kind of at least consider all aspects or all possibilities.
You know, I saw that conspiracy theory that you're talking about, the one for Arkansas, Mountain View, right? Wasn't that where it was, Mountain View, Arkansas?
Yeah, it was right near there, yeah.
Tell us about how many banks were there and why did they build so many banks?
You know, I wish I could remember the number, Lavendar. I think
the number that comes to me is 53 banks.
It's something like that. And the town is like just a couple thousand people. It's really crazy. I should know that number, but because I remember being really startled by it, but I guess I'm suffering from Alzheimer's disease. I can't call it up right at the moment, but it was an undue amount of banks in this tiny little place, and it's just very interesting. You know, I mean, there's other things that are in that area that I can't quite mention just yet, for one thing, because it would be identifying some people that I'm not quite ready to let them know I'm on their trail yet. So, you know, maybe next time, if you're kind enough to invite me back again sometime, you know, I'll have some more to reveal about that area. But there's some interesting things, and I believe that it's very likely that there are some items of great importance that are hidden away in Arkansas.
Now, how far is Mountain View from Eureka Springs?
Oh, it's not very far at all. I think like 20, 30 minutes at the most.
See, that whole area intrigues me so much.
It really does. And I remember, again, you know, as a kid going over to Eureka Springs, and as a young adult going over there, and it was just, that is my favorite spot in the United States. And And so you're stepping into another world there. It doesn't look like any of the rest of the state. You know, of course, they call it Little Switzerland, and the architecture there is just amazing. There's so many incredible features there, both natural and architectural. And, of course, there's the, you know, the springs there where, you know, the old Crescent Hotel there, which is, I think, built in the late 1800s, was a medical spa. And it's still open as a hotel, but people would go there, you know, for therapeutic reasons, and still do. But certainly back in those days, in Victorian times, they went there. The Crescent Hotel, by the way, is notoriously haunted. And I had some friends that out here in L.A. who went and filmed down there for a show called My Ghost Story I think it was on Biography Channel. And they said that place is so haunted. And there's particularly one room that is very, very haunted. I think it's room 209, but certainly the hotel knows what room it is, and they probably identified on their website. But I can't wait to get back down in that area sometime soon and get over to Eureka Springs, and I definitely want to go check out that room at the Crescent.
Well, let me tell you, I was in Tulsa in 1971, and I went over to Eureka Springs and with my friend, and we went into the hotel, and the minute I walked in, my hair just stood up on my arm. I did not know it was haunted. No one had told us. But that night, oh, my goodness, the experiences that we had, I had to calm my friend down to make sure that, you know, he wasn't going to just grab his clothes and start running down the street.
Oh, my God.
You know what? We just need to be still, and someone's here to communicate with us. And there was this lady, and she was just at the foot of our bed, and she just stood there for a long period of time, and I just talked to her. So I'm glad that you brought that up. I hadn't thought of that in years.
Oh, my God, did she share anything with you? Did she identify herself? Or
No, I did all the talking. She said nothing. So, but it was in 71, that was a big deal.
Yeah. Did she look sad or distressed or?
No, she just stood there and just, she just looked at me and I just kept talking and talking. This went on for about 30 minutes, long time.
Wow. That is amazing. Well,
yeah.
That makes me want to go even more.
And we need to take that trip together, yeah.
I would love it. You name it, I will do it.
Okay. Ario, you there? I'm going to turn the show back over to you. Renee, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and we'll talk later by phone, okay?
Thank you so much.
Okay, Ario, it's up to you.
Okay, thank you. Well, I'm intrigued about this, the concepts of things that are hidden, especially in that area of Arkansas, because that's where we do our crystal quests, and there's a lot of history in that area. And the earliest things that I read about had to do with the Native Americans and how they would come from great distances to take the healing waters in that area. And how far is Eureka Springs from the hot springs?
You know, it's a little further than from Mountain View, but it's certainly, you know, not a huge long drive. It might be maybe 4 hours or something like that. Don't quote me on that, but I know
that, yeah,
I was mapping out because I'm planning on doing some, you know, some tours or events down there myself, so I was kind of looking at the places that we wanted to hit. Hot Springs was one, you know, Mount Ida, Hot Springs, Eureka Springs, and then Eastern Oklahoma and to Tahlequah and Lost City.
Well, like
so
I said,
it's not a huge distance, so very doable, very doable.
And do you have any plans or ideas about some kind of documentary concerning everything that we've been talking about here with Oklahoma and Arkansas?
You know, I would love to. I'd love to get some interest in a documentary on that. I feel like I need to do a little bit more research and go back there, which I'm planning to do soon, and confirm some things on the ground. I've been back recently, but unfortunately it was just for my father's passing and funeral, and I didn't have time because it was all family time. So I will be going back for that particular reason to follow up on some research and maybe there for an extended time. So I'll keep in touch with you guys, and I'll let you know what's going on, and love to for you guys to come over, and we can do some stuff together. That'd be fantastic.
Absolutely. So have you ever been in the water? Either
In Eureka Springs? Yes, I have been in Eureka Springs, but it has been many, many, many years ago. I was probably, gosh, you know, maybe 24 at the time, and now I'm about 104. So it's been a while, but I definitely want to get back over there. I've been reading a lot about them, and in Eureka Springs and Hot Springs as well. And it's very, very similar to what you find over in France, over there in the River Salles, that runs through Rennes-Leban, and they have those hot springs in the river that you can go in, and they even have the Roman baths there still. The same structure and everything. You can go inside and do the baths in there, or you can just go directly into the river. It's all the same water.
Well, so you haven't experienced the hot springs waters yet?
I have not.
Well,
I want to go.
We had the pleasure of doing that as part of our crystal quest. Because the waters in that area, see if I can remember exactly what I read about as far as the history, but the waters have a journey from rainfall. It filters down, goes into the underground springs. It sits on the crystal beds, and then it takes another 3,500 years to work its way up. Now maybe it's 3,500 years for the whole cycle to work its way back up into the source of the waters that comes down out of the mountains and is then piped into the bathhouses. And in because of the
those are like ancient waters then.
Right, and they're
that you experience.
They've never been touched by man. And the fact that they filter down across crystal veins, and the whole area, Arkansas is just really a concentration of quartz crystal veins, so that adds something to the water. And you know, the Native Americans would come from, and I mean North Americans as well, they would make a journey almost like a spiritual pilgrimage from Canada, from the Denver area, up from South Texas and probably across the border there, but they would come from everywhere because of the waters. And I would love to see a documentary or at least some of this information included if you're going to do something about that. There's a book, Lavendar, what's the title of that book? Folklore?
Land of the Vapors.
The Land of the Vapors? Is that the title of the book that we just read?
I think so.
I think it's folklore of the Land of the Vapors or the Valley of the Vapors. And I would just love to see this be part of your documentary, because with the advent of modern medical science, people were sold the idea that this is superior to the ancient beliefs that the water had curative powers. But I can tell you, after being in the water myself, you feel different when you get out, and it's an improvement. But it's just fascinating. So when I saw that you were going to talk about the hidden history of Oklahoma and Arkansas, that's really it's readily known in that area, I suppose, but it's not really mainstream.
It's not. It is really not. I mean, these are things that, as I said, I grew up there and spent my early adulthood there. I never heard these things. Never, ever heard any reference to any of this stuff until many years later, after I was already out here. And that's why I was so surprised that, oh, my goodness. I've come all the way out here, been all over the place, researching in France and England and everywhere, and then where do I end up? Right back in my own backyard, back in my home state of Oklahoma. It's so crazy, because I never imagined there was any such thing there.
Right. Well,
but there's a lot. There is a lot.
Everybody's grass seems greener on the other side.
Isn't that true?
That is a very interesting full circling that you've done. But, just the Valley of the Vapors was considered by the Native Americans to be a sacred gift from Great Spirit. And they would go there and they'd get in the water, the mud and the clay around the water, they would use that on themselves. And the interesting thing is that all of these tribes that would come from all over the place, some of them were at war with each other, but the law, the accepted way was when you get to this sacred place, you lay down your weapons, and then there's no fighting. So it became called the Valley of Peace. But, it's like when you leave, you can go ahead and pick up your arrows and go fight with your neighbors. But they all laid down their weapons in sprints for the sacred waters, and the vapors themselves were healing. And at one time, they had five different types of water there with benefits to the eyes, benefits to the kidneys, benefits to the skin, I'm not sure about what all five were, but those were some of them. And now you're talking
about underground caves.
That's so interesting,
because I just discovered, that's such another interesting correlation with France, because I just discovered, I keep discovering new things about the place over there, that around the area of France there, that same area, there's an area called the Ariège. And if you went to Montségur, Montségur is in the Ariège. So it's around that area. There are several different places of, like, healing spas and healing springs over there. And it's the same way. If you want, if you have a kidney problem, you go to this one. If you have, you know, eyesight problem, you go to this one. If you have heart problems, you go to this one. If you have energy problem, go to that one. So it's very interesting how that correlates. Kind of confirms that there are these places around the earth that are very special.
And it has to point to some grand design that we're just not quite privy to. But yeah, you put the pieces together, and you know, we have everything we need here without the artificial inventions of man. But now these caves that go underground, when you were talking about that, I had to wonder about the first people that go into the cave and think, well, we're just going to walk here for months. I mean, they had to have taken food and supplies, and how did they know that they were going to walk through this cave system and come out in Denver?
Who knows? I know. Unless they had some kind of special knowledge or something, I really don't know. Or somebody just struck out, I guess, maybe, and discovered it. I mean, I'm sure early on, I can imagine that there were people that did strike out and ended up, you know, getting sort of caught in the middle without enough supplies or something like that. There probably were people that did perish under there, but somebody found out that there's a huge network that goes all over. You know, I discovered there's a huge underground network also in Joplin, Missouri. If you go on Google and just Google Joplin Underground, you'll see, and they're making use of it commercially. There's like huge storage areas, and you see big trucks driving in there with lights, you know, illuminating the underground. It's quite extensive. It's quite amazing, and I think, my goodness, you know, there's a whole network of underground, not just there, but across the United States. It's just something that we just don't know about that much. It's sort of been a well-kept secret somehow, and I can't imagine how it's kept secret because it's huge.
Well, you know, if it doesn't get on TV, and that's really the source of most people's understanding, and unless you live in the area and have heard local legends, but, you know, there's a lot of people that we talk to in the Hot Springs, Mount Ida area, lived there all their lives and never once went into the water.
Mm.
And that is just, again, you know, the grass is always greener somewhere else, and you don't think you have anything in your own backyard. Back to over the rainbow.
That's right. But, you know, it's interesting, too, to think about how it all ended up really tying in with all the other research that I've been doing. You know, at first I didn't see any connection, but then there were, you know, the French monks, and I found that there was, you know, a lot of French explorers that came through there, that area. And another thing that drew my attention to that area of Arkansas was the fact that Albert Pike, who's the most famous, you know, American Freemason, who wrote Rules and Dogma for the Masons, settled in that area. He was on a trip across country, and he stopped there, and he never left. And he spent the rest of his life there. He was a city guy, a kind of a sophisticated guy, and I thought it was odd that he would end up in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the Ozarks, and then stay there and live out his life. And I think that he knew that there was something secret there. And of course, there's that whole legend about the Knights of the Golden Circle, which was a secret society that Albert Pike was supposed to have been affiliated with, in addition to the Freemasons, along with the Indian Stan Waity, and that there's that legend of the Confederate gold. There's supposed to be a huge cache of gold that's been guarded by the Knights of the Golden Circle, you know, since the Civil War times. And there's all kinds of things there. And I thought, why would, you know, this secret society guy, you know, be in that area? Another thing that drew me were some of the place names. You know, there's Mount Nebo, which is, you know, was the birthplace of Moses. There's a place called Mount Magazine. Well, a magazine is a repository or a storage area. What were they storing at Mount Magazine? You know, is there something still stored there? So there's a lot of different things. And in fact, the word Ozark is a bastardization of the two French words Ozark, A-U-X-A-R-C, which means either of the ark or to the ark, which I find fascinating.
Wow, that just really fires the imagination.
It does, and you know, with the Moses reference,
may be referring, I'm certainly the mineral wealth and you know, geologically that exists in that area. I believe that every mineral that we know of exists in that area. You know, and then there's other areas of the world where it's more, you know, more iron here, or maybe more gold over there, but Arkansas's got it all. And it's funny that the main road going from Hot Springs all the way to past Mount Ida is called Albert Pike Highway.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's Albert Pike State Park, and there's all kinds of references to Albert Pike there. The other thing that was of interest to me about him was that, you know, the time that he spent there, which was the rest of his life, I think he came there as a fairly young man, he spent it, you know, working with the Native Americans. And I think it was because he knew that they knew things and had particular knowledge about the land and what might have been there, that, you know, the stories that might have been passed down. Another little interesting note about the Native Americans there, the Kituwa Cherokee tribe that I was speaking about earlier is a small tribe. It's not the Cherokee Nation. It's a separate little tribe, and they're called the original people and the keepers of the sacred fire. And they are called that because they are the ones who still continue to practice their original form of worship, which is the stomp dance and other rituals that, you know, the Cherokee Nation has been primarily, you know, westernized and is primarily Christian. And a lot of Kituwas are Christians as well, but they still maintain the old ways and the original ways, and that's why they're called the original people. And they've got some really interesting history. And in fact, some people believe that the Kituwa are the lost tribe of Israel. And there's been some heavy Israeli interest in the Kituwa tribe, even though it's this little tiny tribe. And it's just, and they keep these sacred fires. There was one sacred fire, and they maintain these all the time and keep them going and keep them going. And they're at these secret locations around eastern Oklahoma there, and they tend to them every day. It's really, really some interesting stuff coming out of there that is just fascinating to me.
Well, I certainly hope that that you're able to do a documentary and putting all the pieces together, because I think it would be fascinating. There's such a rich history in that area that I think a lot of people would really be interested in. So,
I believe so too. It's like it's the old thing of, you know, whatever, you know, what are they going to let on TV? And what I would really like to do is to, you know, raise the money and do an independent documentary so that I can include everything that comes up and not just that which won't upset the advertisers.
Right.
Just, you know, it's there's a lack of freedom. I mean, I don't want to minimize, you know, some of the shows and some of the great things that have come out on TV and some of the many people that I've worked with on the television networks and in production companies here in L.A., but there is a freedom about doing an independent film that you just can't beat it. You know, it's you're free then as an artist and a researcher to really tell it like it is and like you see it and not like someone would like to see it.
Right, right. Well, yeah, without restriction.
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah,
so Renee,
having
we
to worry about the bottom line, the dollar, the advertiser's
right.
dollars.
Right. Well, following the bottom line has gotten us into all kinds of trouble.
That's
so
right.
We have a caller with a question. If you don't mind, we'll turn it over to the switchboard callers. If you have a question or comment for Renee, you need to press 1 on your keypad so we know you want to come on the air. But first of all, we have. We're going to be hearing from Joseph as soon as I get his mic open. Hello, Joseph.
Well, hello, ladies.
Hi there.
Hi there.
It's great, Renee. We've spoken before on previous times you've been on the show, and I have so many questions. I could talk for the rest of the show, as these women can verify, but I will not do that tonight. Let me just say how wonderful it is to hear Lavendar's voice. I was so concerned for her with all the weather they had down there.
Oh,
she sounds great, and so we can get on with things. I was in London right after Holy Blood, Holy Grail was released, so I was probably the first American to see it, and it knocked me back on my heels. Well, it's further back than that, but I wouldn't say where. And it was so exciting to read that. While I was there on that trip, I went up to Bath, England, up to the baths there. And I was in the Benedict Hills, you all talking about baths. The water in that bath there fell on Benedict Hills 10,000 years before it came into that pool. So, I mean, there are other amazing baths on the planet. I live in a town where the Book of Records was here last year, and we have the highest and deepest springs on the planet. I live in Pagosa Springs in Colorado. So, I mean, I know these things are fabulous, these gifts of the earth, this hot water, this healing water. And I'd love to ask you about that. I would love so to be involved in whatever project you're going to do. My grandmother was Cherokee and gave birth to my grandfather in Arizona. She died giving birth to him. So the connections are just amazing. I could go on and on. They're, I mean, when you talk about coincidences, it gets ridiculous. So I would love to know how to get in touch with you. And I will send you an email.
I'm on Facebook. You know, you can send me a message through Facebook, or I can give you my email address, which is Renee, R-E-N-E, K, Barnett, B-A-R-N-E-T-T, at gmail.com.
You got it. I'm not really good with the social media. It sort of irks me, but I will send it to your email. And thank you so much for all the information today. It was very exciting.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much. You know, I'm like you. I could just talk and talk and talk about this stuff because I'm just hooked on it. You know,
well,
it's just so amazing.
I mean, of course. See, I grew up along the Mississippi River, and all the activity there, all the building of the pyramids and everything that went along there, the Discovery Channel had a program several years ago, I have not been able to find it since, where they have discovered foundations for temples all along the Mississippi River. And I thought, whoa, wait a minute, that sounds familiar. And then I got back from Egypt a few years ago and realized that Egypt ended approximately the 30th parallel, went over to New Orleans where a lot of my family lives, and I went, wait a minute, I'm on the 30th parallel. It's like, you know, the river comes from the north and then comes from the south, and it's been separated, but it's the same holy river.
It's the same. It's amazing when you really look at the ley lines, the meridians, and things like that, and realize the connections. And like you said, where they're located, the correlations are just astounding.
It really is, Renee. Anyway, thank you so much. I'm going to get off now and let others talk, but you'll be hearing from me very soon.
Thank you, Joseph. I look forward to it.
Thank you, Renee, and bye, ladies. And I'm so glad that our dear, dear lady is safe and didn't get blown away.
Absolutely.
So are we.
Yeah.
Thanks
okay.
so much.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
That was great.
Yeah, Lavender was actually in an airplane when those hurricanes, or when those tornadoes were spinning around, so she had a little bit of galactic protection, I'm sure, came through unscathed.
Oh, my goodness. That was so unbelievable, that weather, and the fact, you know, that Moore, Oklahoma got hit so terribly, just as it did in 1999. It was unbelievable. I was... In 99, I was working for a production company that was doing a Discovery Channel program called Wild Rescues. And I didn't even work on that show. I was working on a Fox show at the time. But the owner of the company remembered that I was from Oklahoma, and he comes running into my office and says, "You're from Oklahoma? Can you go there and, you know, cover this for Discovery for us?" And I said, "I guess." And they said, "Go home, pack a bag. Somebody's going to pick you up in 15 minutes to take you to the airport." So that tornado hit early in the day, and then by the afternoon, I was touching down in Oklahoma City, and I was, coincidentally, another coincidence, my very best childhood girlfriend was a city councilwoman in Oklahoma City. And so I was able to get into the command center where they were, you know, organizing all of the rescue efforts and everything, and emergency efforts. And I was able to be behind the lines of the, that they had cordoned off the area, and no media was allowed in there. But I was able to be in there because of my friend, and got the actual first shots of the devastation of the 99 tornado in Moore, Oklahoma, on the air and on the internet for Discovery Channel, and it was amazing. And I noticed that last week, looking at the images on TV, it looked just the same. And I thought, what are the chances, you know, and they were even talking about that, the weather people were saying, you know, what are the chances of a tornado, an F5 tornado, hitting there twice? It's just uncanny. It's just very, very strange. But, you know, my heart goes out to my home state of Oklahoma and all the people that have lost their lives or lost loved ones or were injured, lost their homes. And I know everybody in the country and around the world is supporting Oklahoma right now, and I think that's a wonderful thing. And, you know, if you can help out in any way, please help the good citizens of Oklahoma.
Well, we certainly will. And for everyone that's listening, just send as much positive energy and the emerald ray to that area, to those people, to help them get through. So, Renee, it has been such a pleasure having you with us, and the time has just flown by. So please keep in touch and let us know when you're
just try and stop me. You can't keep me away.
Oh, nor would we want to. So
well,
thank you so much.
I love you guys.
Your email is Renee, R-E-N-E, Barnett, B-A-R-N-E-T-T, at gmail.com. Your Facebook
page. There's a K
page
in there. There's a K in the middle. It's Renee,
oh, K
R-E-N-E-K,
okay.
Barnett, at gmail.com. And if somehow you missed that, then, you know, certainly try to look me up on Facebook, and I will email you back if you don't like to talk on Facebook. I completely understand.
Okay. And tomorrow night your show is on at, is it 8 o'clock Pacific time?
8 Pacific, you know, 10 Central, 11 Eastern. And it's on LATalkRadio.com, Channel 2. And my guest is the Grand Master of the Rembrandt Chateau Mystery, Henry Lincoln.
Well, everybody, make sure you tune in for that. And we will look forward to talking to you again in the near future and hope you connect all those dots.
Yeah. I'll keep you apprised.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much, Renee. And we'd like to thank everyone for listening. Thank you. And thank you to our wonderful Starseed Radio Academy team, Chris, Fiona, Anastasia, Lavendar, and myself. Say thank you so much, everyone, and good night. Bye-bye.
Good night.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.